First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Wright, Brandon Marshall, Kevin Wildes, and we had ourselves a game of all games to put a cap on what has been a great season in baseball, a great World Series in baseball, and we say congratulations to the Dodgers this morning. That is where we begin.
Finally.
Yeah, the best team during the shortened baseball season turned out to be the last team standing. Nick was right. Dodgers are your World Series champs. They beat the Rays 3-1 last night in Game 6 to close it out. Among the many storylines this morning, however, the ever-so-curious decision from Rays manager Kevin Cash to pull the red-hot Snell in the sixth inning while the guy was pitching an absolute gem. Dodgers were thrilled with the move. Obviously, they quickly came in, they scored two runs, and they selfishly never gave the lead back. The Dodgers finally getting over the hump. After the game, though, Kevin Cash on that decision.
Lineup the Dodgers feature is as potent as any team in the league. Personally, I felt Blake had done his job and then some. Mookie coming around for the third time through. I value that. I totally respect and understand the questions that come with it. Blake gave us every opportunity to win. He was outstanding. They're not easy decisions. And that's where I came to the decision. I felt it was best after the guy got on base. Barnes hit the single. Didn't want Mookie or Seager seeing Blake a third time.
I did everything I could to, you know, prove my case to stay out there. And then for us to lose, you know, it just sucks.
I'm not the manager. I don't make decisions. Asking for my opinion, though, I think it was Blake's game. He was dominating. I don't really care what the numbers say, third time through the order or whatever. There wasn't many guys making contact in general and no hard contact whatsoever. And, I think we all wanted to see him go in there or stay in there. But it's, Cash and everyone, they've been great this whole year with making decisions, and, you know, it didn't work out for us right there.
I was pretty happy because he was dominating us and we just weren't seeing him. So, you know, once Austin got that hit, then they went to the pen. I think that Mookie looked at me with a little smile and we were just all kind of excited that Snell was out of the game.
Well, you could say that every decision that Cash had made up until this point helped get the team to the World Series. There's a lot of head scratchers, and you can go back and look at it. But, Nick, did Kevin Cash give the game away when he pulled Snell as hot as he was playing?
Listen, he didn't give the game away. Obviously, though, it was the wrong decision. And this is one of those sports moments that is really, really complex and also incredibly basic. The complexity of it is it has to do with the Rays' approach. This approach is why they got there. The way they have handled Blake Snell all year, who has not gotten through a sixth inning once the entire season. The complexity of modern baseball and third time through the order and of trusting the numbers and all of that. The simplicity is this. The Dave Roberts quote. If for one moment Dave Roberts was allowed to make a decision for the Rays, you know what decision he would have made? Get Blake Snell the hell out of here because we can't hit him. And you should, in sports, before you make any major managerial decision, ask yourself one final question. Is my opponent hoping I do this? And if the answer to that question is yes, then don't do it. Dave Roberts could have managed both teams in the sixth inning last night, and nothing would have changed. And so, Wildes, I feel like this is where, and this is going to end with people saying, this is why you can't trust the numbers. The numbers got the Rays to this point. But this is right. Why no, you don't simply have an automated manager. This is why you let it be a human being and not a spreadsheet, Wildes. Because there does have to be an allowance for feel and situation. And the feel and situation of this game last night was We got to let Blake get through this, or at least attempt to. And by the way, Wilds, if you weren't going to let him go a third time through the order, then don't let him start the inning. And if you're going to take him out, certainly don't take him out for a crummy middle reliever who keeps giving up runs. It was just bad decision on bad decision, Wilds.
So the thing that I have an issue is the pure surprise on Blake Snell's face and his post-game quote when he's like, I tried everything. Like, are you sure you did? Are you sure you just didn't go and just get out there and the season played out just like it's played out the entire season? And Nick, you mentioned it. I'll just run through it super fast. These are how many innings he pitched this year. 2, 3, 3, 5, 5, 5 and 2/3, 5, 5, 5 and a third, 5 and a third. Postseason, 5 and 2/3, 5, 5, 4, 4 and 2/3, 5 and a third. Where is the big surprise? Like, did he hear 1-7 in there? Did he hear 1-9 in there? Did he hear 1 Babe Ruth-esque 11 innings in there? Like, it's not happening. So if he wanted to stay in the game, if he wanted to go to Kevin Cash, Brandon, before the game and say, hey, you know what? I know you're giving me a chance to win the game. Give me a chance to lose the game. I want to go until my arm falls off. I want this to be on me either way. Don't manage ourselves out of this game. Then I would have bought it. But for him to be like, oh, I'm swearing when he comes off the mound, when that's the way it's been since July of last year, makes no sense to me, Brandon.
Well, look, I'll tell you this, Wilds. I don't like it. And it's one of the things that, you know, I struggle with when it comes to baseball is the data and the analytics. Like, they're good, but they're good when you use them right. Let's go back to the NBA Finals. What did we see? We saw LeBron James playing extra minutes. We talked about how the other teams, the Clippers and even the Nuggets, how they stuck to their game plan when they should have been using their players more. Look at Jimmy Butler. Remember that vision of Jimmy Butler so exhausted in the fourth quarter? That's what you expect out of your star players in those big moments. There's something about star players in big moments where they can give you just a little bit more or even a lot more. And that's why I was so disappointed, because he was so hot and everybody know it. Yep. So for me, this comes down to Cash. There was other situations in the game, obviously, but that was a defining moment. You got to leave that guy in there. That was bad for me. If I'm a player in that situation, I'm doing a little bit more than just cursing in my glove.
Well, 2 points here. One is, you're not going to win an Elimination World Series game with one run. So the Rays' bats needed to be better, and that's kind of being lost in the sauce here. But the other point that I think is relevant, because Brandon brought up basketball, and I think this is where the sports can coincide and you look at the analytics. Wilds, you will remember this. All year long, I was sounding the alarm about Giannis's minutes. Everyone was over the moon. Look at what he's doing in only 31 minutes a game. And I said, well, the concern is in the postseason, to Brandon's point, he's going to have to play 41 minutes a game. And is his body going to be ready for it? When you bring up that all year long, and this is what got the Rays there, I get it. Blake Snell never got through six. You never gave him a chance to see, can he figure it out? Can he find extra gear the third time through an order? Can he, because in a playoff spot, in a World Series elimination game, we might need him to do it. So I get why Cash would say, I get why he would say, I'm not going to ask him to do something I haven't asked him to do all year. So the problem might be, Brandon, that they didn't ask him to do it all year.
Here's my problem is that the reason why a lot of these guys got there because they did things that was uncomfortable. They did things that they weren't supposed to do before. They're freak athletes.
Yeah.
When guys are in the zone, you let them cook. You let them go in. You let them stay right there. And he pulled them too fast. Another inning. That's all people wanted. Just one more. Come on, Cash.
Well, obviously, the sentence I have to say here is hindsight is 2020. Clayton Kershaw, finally a champion, and his L.A. neighbor, King James, taking to Twitter, congratulating him, tweeting, man, can we please have a parade? I know we can't, but damn, I want to celebrate with our Lakers and Dodgers fans. L.A. is the city of champions. And then this, of course, there'd be this. Oh, and yeah, put some respect on Clayton Kershaw's name now and forever. Watch LeBron coin washed Clayton. I can see that one coming next. All right, let's play a little take your pick. Brandon, which Los Angeles superstar legacy was more impacted by this past title, Clayton Kershaw or LeBron James?
Kershaw, known as one of the greatest pitchers ever, couldn't get over the hump. He did it last night. He played well in the postseason. This is all about Kershaw. LeBron James was already in the conversation of the GOAT. Is he the GOAT? Probably not. That's up for a debate on another show. I just want to take a little shot at Nick.
It's probably Kershaw because Kershaw was the, you know, only player to win three Cy Youngs and didn't have a title. Also, bonus take for you. Not a parade guy. So I disagree with LeBron, even if we were not in a pandemic. Just not a parade guy. Just not a big fan. I don't like linear processions. Just largely bored.
Lateral maybe.
Before I give my answer, good job by our producers getting lifelong and avid Dodger fan LeBron James into the show. He's never rooted for another baseball team. He's always been a Dodger guy through and through. So yeah, I'm happy right. for LeBron especially. He's suffered with them, you know, over these last 30 years. The answer, though, Brandon and Wilds are right, is Kershaw. LeBron already was the GOAT, or if you want to say the second greatest player ever, fine. We don't have to argue about it. This was missing for Clayton Kershaw. He needed it. And I'm going to give a bonus tease, Jenna. Where does this put Kershaw on the list of the greatest pitchers of the last 100 years? I might have an answer for that in about 4 minutes, Jenna. How about that?
Feel like you will.
4 minutes.
Once again, Dodgers are World Series champions this morning. We'll have much more in the game coming up and a little tease from Nick. But let's take a turn, talk some Cowboys. Wait till you hear what had Jerry Jones so fired up yesterday. That's next. First things first.
4 minutes.
This weekend starts Saturday strong with the big noon Saturday game of the week. It's a good one. Jim Harbaugh and the 13th ranked Wolverines facing off with the Spartans. One of the wildest Big Ten rivalries. And it all starts with big noon kickoff at 10 Eastern. Then it's Michigan State, Michigan Saturday at noon Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. All right, guys, we got to do it. Got to talk some Dallas Cowboys. The team, which needs some help on offense and defense and special teams and coaching and leadership and PR, drowning in bad storylines this season. The latest, a frustrated Jerry Jones losing his temper during his weekly radio hit when discussing leadership on this team. Take a listen.
Does your team have a leadership void?
We're in the offensive line. Where would you have a leadership void? Is it an experience void? Is it a talent void? Is it a leadership void? I'm not trying to be cute here. The answer is no. The answer is no. Shut up and let me answer. No.
Jerry, when you go into the locker room, what I'm asking is, do you see the intangibles?
You're not asking me that. I gave you the answer. When I go into the locker room, there's no leadership void in my eyes.
Okay.
Now that's your answer. Let's move on.
We should mention Jerry Jones did then go on to profusely apologize, said it was just a culmination of frustration that had been building up for a long time, but. But, Nick, I'll start with you. What was your reaction to what Jerry Jones had to say and how he said it?
It was multi-layered. And, listen, I actually used to work with the guy who was interviewing him there. And as a former radio guy myself, part of my reaction was, oh, man. That was one of the more awkward interactions on a radio show since I asked Matt Schaub on the Matt Schaub show if he would bench himself. He didn't tell me to shut up, but he never did the show again. So, listen, my reaction is, once I got past that, and I know this is an unpopular opinion, I feel badly for Jerry Jones. I know nobody does. Folks that take massive schadenfreude in the Cowboys struggles. But think, if you're Jerry Jones, just put yourself in his shoes for a moment. Now, the shoes, I understand, are propped up on a marble table in a billion-dollar yacht. I get that. But he loves football. He lives for football. And think about what the last 6 years have been. Since Dez caught it, but he didn't, and that Super Bowl chance is wiped away. The next year, Tony Romo gets hurt. The next year, Tony Romo gets hurt again, but you find Dak Prescott, and that year ends in heartbreak because of the Mason Crosby in and then out kick. The next year, you're fighting with the league all year about Zeke, and you miss the playoffs. The next year, you think you turn it around by signing Amari Cooper, and you lose another playoff heartbreak. The next year, you blame it all on the coach because you can't win close games, and then you're at this year. All your pieces in place, as expensive of any team as you have, everyone ready, seemingly everyone healthy, and it's a disaster. And you're 78 years old, and you're like, what more can I do? So I feel badly for Cowboys fans. I feel badly for Jerry Jones. They didn't deserve to have Dak Prescott break his ankle, have the entire defense forget how to play, and maybe have hired the wrong coach. So that's my reaction, Brandon, is I feel badly for Jerry Jones because I can only imagine how frustrating the last half decade has been for him.
Then go get a leader. Then the question is right. Oh. You know, it was valid. It was a valid question to ask, right? Go back to what you said, Tony Romo, hit the Tony Romo days. You go in that locker room, what broke down that team? Tony Romo, Jason Witten, Terrell Owens, even Jason Garrett, they were all fighting. They didn't get along. And then you fast forward to today. Like, show me where the leader is. There isn't a leader there. There isn't a Bobby Wagner on the defensive side where you look at the roster and say, that's the guy. There isn't a guy on the offensive side where you say, that's the guy. You have your best player on offense right now who is turning the ball over every single game, dropping balls, going through his hands, picks all over the place. So when you look at this question, to me, it's valid. Now, Jerry, he could have been a bit more of a professional, right? Like, I understand that it's tough sitting there talking to the media every single day, but I understand that, you know, that question should have been asked because that's the only thing that's missing on this team. They have the roster. They have a good coach, I believe, okay? Not on the defensive side, but they have enough on the offensive side. So why does it look like this? Wilds, maybe you have the answer, but for me, you know, this right here was a valid question. They need leadership.
All right, so, Brandon, you're saying that, like, basically Zeke should step up and fill that void? We know that offensively he said that he wants to carry the load now that Dak's gone. But do you think that inside the locker room that's Zeke's job as well?
Well, what I'm saying is they need a leader, and I don't know if it's in that locker room, right? Like, it's either you're a leader or you're not. It's a skill.
Right,
I do believe you can
get
grow.
It? All right, can you go
not
get
not at this
a
point of the
leadership?
Season, right? Because it's...
You can't. So it's a wrap.
It's tough for a guy to come in mid-season and be that guy. It just doesn't happen. You don't know him. You know, you got to build relationships. There's going to be some chemistry, some continuity issues. So, no, you can't just go get a guy mid-season and think that he's going to galvanize this locker room and galvanize this team. It just doesn't happen. So, you know, you would expect that Zeke is that guy. You would expect that those guys on the defensive line that they pay so much money that they would be the guy, but they're not.
Go ahead, Jenna.
Well, I was going to say, Nick, and I'm probably going to lead into you, then maybe Jerry Jones needs to let Mike McCarthy be that guy if there's no one on the team. Can't your head coach galvanize a locker room when no one else right now is in there doing that?
Well, part of the head coach inherently is leadership. But I think what Brandon's talking about is from a player's perspective that it's top down from the head coach, but then each individual side of the football and then maybe even smaller, each individual position group has leaders. I get that on the offensive side, the leader clearly and obviously was Dak. He suffered a horrible injury. And the offense, by the way, aside from the turnovers, I know that's a big but aside from the turnovers, prior to Dak's injury, the offense was functioning at a high level. My question for Brandon is, did they go into the season not thinking they needed one on defense? Or did they think they had what? Did they think it was going to be DeMarcus Lawrence? They thought it was going to be Jalen Smith.
Yeah.
They thought
did
they think he was there and whomever that person isn't doing it?
Absolutely.
Or did they just not think that was an important part of it? Like, because I don't know who that would be on defense.
Jalen Smith. I've been around Jalen. He's an awesome guy. He's the ultimate competitor. I don't know what's happening with him. I don't know what's happening with Zeke. So, yes, they went into this season, Jenna, thinking that they had it. Because when you look at the roster outside, you're like, yeah, they got it. Dak Prescott on this side, Jalen on the other side. We are good to go. And obviously not. And it's not just from, you know, the record. I'm looking at the film. I want to see it show up on film. I want to see a guy angry so that the conversation we had around Tom Brady 3 weeks ago from Thursday Night Football when he's cursing out his teammates and getting on them, holding them accountable, where is that? Like, that's what you want to see in a losing locker room. You want to see guys passionate. You want to see guys that care. I haven't seen that yet. That is healthy communication. I want to see guys getting after it with one another. I don't want to see guys talking about, well, it's just on me. No. Call each other out.
And
internally,
Brandon,
call each other out. But I want to see it.
And while you were talking, the Cowboys are trying to find accountability elsewhere. Tom Pelissero just tweeted 30 seconds ago that Dontari Poe and Daryl Worley are either going to be traded or cut today. So they're trying to find accountability somewhere by, you know, making roster changes. That's out around the edges. But maybe, Jenna, that sends a message to other guys on the team that what they are putting out on the field week after week, there will be some level of accountability for it. And that's via Tom Pelissero.
Yeah. All right, question for you. Where does Nick rank the Dallas Cowboys? As he'd say, it ain't great. Nick will break down the Cowboys are, where the Steelers are, where the Chiefs go. Heading into week 8, his tears will be released again. You don't want to miss it. It's next.
And best pitchers of the last 100 years. I promise it's coming.
You look fantastic. Mookie Betts, you're the guy in my book. A cross-training fool.
Patriots can use him at wide receiver.
So could the Cowboys. Time for the moment we've all been waiting for. The unveiling of Nick's updated NFL tiers as we enter week 8.
Yeah, let's go.
Nick, you got some movement in the ranks this week. All right.
We got some movement, Jenna. Here we go. Every Wednesday, 8 a.m. sharp, we're going to bring you the updated tiers. You can see the movement by the arrows. We'll start on the bottom. The Jets stay the Jets. The worst division ever stays the worst division ever. So we don't have to worry about that. Looking for a coach or a quarterback. Here's what I'm going to say about the teams there. Broncos and Vikings don't matter, but Texans, Chargers, Bengals, Falcons, Jags all play fun football games. Texans, Chargers, Bengals, it's fun to watch their quarterbacks. Falcons, it's fun to invent new ways to lose. And the Jags, it's fun to find ways Jenna's going to make excuses for Gardner Minshew. Now, relevant teams. Let's go top 5 tiers. Let's start with flawed but dangerous. Oh, look, Detroit Lions making an appearance. They were on the looking for a coach or quarterback. They're still looking for a coach, but I got to give them credit. They're 3-3, could be 4-2. The Raiders, they moved down. The Raiders, they were my 7th playoff pick for the AFC. Been a little disappointing as of late. It was 24-20 against the Bucs, and then they just got dog-walked the rest of the way. The Panthers could be interesting with the addition of Christian McCaffrey. The Niners, I'm still holding out on because the schedule gets so tough. I like the Dolphins. Colts didn't play since we last did this. Now, flawed but no ring. This is important. Brandon Marshall made a demand last time I did these tiers. Why are the Cardinals and Rams so low? I listened to his demand. I talked to the committee. I watched the games. We moved them up. Unfortunately, we had to move the Patriots down. The Browns, Bears, and Bills stay static. Championship threats. Oh, there's a new team in town. Don't ever say Nick Wright doesn't give credit where it's due. Tampa Bay Bucks, I was skeptical. Thought you might lose to the Raiders. You crush them. Brady looks great. You're now a championship threat. Those other teams remain. No reason to change the top 2 tiers. Brandon Marshall, there are your flawless week 8 tiers. I assume, unlike last week, this week, you have no issues with them whatsoever. Yep.
Absolutely, I have an issue. They're not flawless. Listen, I'm glad that you gave respect to the Cardinals and also the Rams. You got them right. Yep. That's very good. Very good job. But then the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yeah,
come on, man. What do they have to do to get to the contender tier? Like, that's where I think you're missing it right here. Let's get Tampa up, and then also let's put like an emoji eyeball next to the San Francisco 49ers. Okay. Right now you have them in the right spot, but I believe they should be at the playoff tier, but no ring. Emojis, okay? Can I put an emoji on your little
the big
tier
eyes
list? Is that okay?
I don't know.
I don't want to mess it up.
Emojis. So listen.
Okay, can we go back to let's go back to Tampa. Let's go back to Tampa.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I want to go back to Tampa. That's the hot take right here.
Yes.
I don't understand
why. Okay, so here's the thing.
You won't put them at the contender.
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you right now. First of all, there has to be a level of tier integrity. And you can't jump a team two tiers in 1 week. You just can't. There's no. Then what's
Seth,
the point?
Who is your tier? It's your tier. You own this.
I get it. I do own it. But I'm telling you right now, you're not going to see teams, unless there is a massive injury that makes you drop them down multiple tiers, you're not going to see teams skipping steps. It's important in life to take every step. They were in flawed but dangerous, or they were in playoffs but no more. And now, by the way, that third tier, Wilds, is a team that could win the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
I have elevated. Prior to this week, there were only eight teams I thought that actually, or seven teams, it was eight, that could win the Super Bowl. Now there's nine. I've got to give the Tampa Bay Gronkineers credit. Now, am I still skeptical? Yes. Do I think they are as good as the teams above them? Absolutely not. But I've got to evaluate what I've seen, Wilds.
Well, I think the committee did a great job. Can I see the full tiers when we get a chance, Katana? Because I have one issue with the structure of your tiers. In the worst division ever, one of those teams has to go to the playoffs. So I think, and I know you don't want to do it, and I know the committee was up long into the night trying to figure out how to deal with them.
This is
but
good.
They should, one of those teams has to move up into playoffs, no ring.
No,
they have
don't.
To. It's just, that's honestly what's going to happen. One of those teams is going to the playoffs.
You have to do it. You have to do it.
Here's the issue.
Pick right now.
Here's the issue.
Pick right now.
First of all, right now, my pick would be Washington. I actually put a small financial investment on Washington at 4-1 to win the division during the Cowboys game. But here's the thing. The committee, which is me, does not like the NFL's playoff format. And we're not going to bastardize our tiers by giving in to the NFL's playoff format. This idea that everybody get, you know, I'm old enough to remember when everybody didn't get a trophy. When the idea wasn't just, oh, you're 7-9, but you won a division, come to the dance. No, you're not going to get elevated just because of a formulaic system where all of a sudden you win your division, all you get to go to the playoffs. I do agree. It's going to end up, Brandon, one of those teams in worst division ever will make the playoffs, but they will stay there on the tiers until they earn it. You need to earn your rankings in these tiers, unlike the NFL playoffs, where one team can just be invited in, Brandon.
No, I really like this. I wish we can do it every single day. Jenna, one quick question, last question. Nick, is there anything that the champs can do to go down a tier? Is there anything that can happen this year where they drop?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. By the way, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. They not only could they drop down, it also is in play that I would have to rename it, of course, but a team joins them. I'm telling you right now, Pittsburgh, if they had played a better second half against Tennessee, they would have joined the Chiefs on that top tier. If the Steelers hadn't let Tennessee come all the way back, be a Gostkowski field goal away from forcing overtime, I would have allowed them to join the Chiefs. I would have had to rename it as the Chiefs and their stepbrother or something. The champs and their stepbrother. I don't know what I would have done. But, yeah, the Chiefs could drop and the Steelers teams could move. The names of these tiers is fluid. That is true. Yeah.
Nick, I got to be honest with you. I don't believe the Steelers, they're ready to move up. They had a great game last week.
What?
They pulled it out.
Oh.
But what I just got to be honest here. The only team, and I'm not saying this because you and I are on opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to the Tampa Bay Bucks. But the Tampa Bay Bucks are the only team right now in football that could potentially join that tier of the champs. Because Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers, they got to eliminate those boneheaded mistakes and those interceptions.
Yeah.
Did you not see Big Ben revert back?
Ben's pass at the end of the game that's what I'm saying. If they were killing the Titans in the first half, if people didn't watch the game, there's 3.5 minutes left. The Steelers are up three. They're right on the outside of the red zone. And Ben throws into triple coverage, giving the Titans a chance to tie or win the game.
He did that a couple times.
It was a terrible play.
He did that a couple
times
during the game, running around like he's playing street football, Jenna. He's running around like he's Baker Mayfield,
Steelers,
Jenna.
Steelers-Ravens this weekend. Steelers-Ravens this weekend. Steelers win, they might move up, Jenna.
I'll
extend the segment if you want to talk Baker, Brandon. One team that Nick has as a playoff team with no ring in the New England Patriots. Swimming in frustration lately, but the finger pointing has landed on the one person you would never expect. That is next. First things first. I read these teasers down. Like soap operas.
Some folks said they should move down a second time.
Tomorrow, Matt Ryan and the Falcons. Boy, they need a win to get their season back on track. They take on NFC South rivals Teddy Bridgewater and the Panthers. It all starts 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Amazon Prime. All right, we're back here talking New England Patriots now. Boy, they're in some pretty unfamiliar territory. 2-4 record, a 3-game losing streak, and coming off a game where Cam Newton looked lost. So bring on the blame. 13-year vet Matthew Slater came out yesterday and said he was disappointed in the team's, quote, attitude and effort in the loss Sunday to San Francisco. That's some pretty sharp criticism from the Patriots' most tenured player. Our guy Brian Westbrook joining us now. Brian, are you surprised to hear this about a Bill Belichick-coached team, attitude and effort?
You know, Jenna, I'm not really that surprised. And there's a couple of different reasons. The number one reason, this doesn't look like or feel like a Bill Belichick type of team. When I think of Bill Belichick types of teams, I'm talking about a disciplined team, a team that is multiple on offense, defense, and special teams. They can do a lot of different things. They're also a core group of guys on those teams that have been passed along through the years, and they keep that consistent. The other big factor, of course, Tom Brady not being there. And I'm not talking about Tom Brady on the field. We know on the field he's the GOAT. But I'm talking about Tom Brady during the week, upholding the Patriots standard. I'm talking about Tom Brady on game day, yelling at people on the sideline. We haven't seen that. They're getting blown out in these last few games. And I'm not seeing anybody getting in anyone's face on the sideline. No one yelling, no one screaming. And then lastly, I'm talking about the core group of guys. Just think about it. There were 8 opt-outs for COVID. Marcus Cannon, Dante Hightower, Patrick Chung, Matt Lacoste. Yeah. I mean, these are Brandon Bolden. These are core group of guys that hold together the special team, hold together the defense. These are the guys that uphold that standard when Tom Brady's not around. They're not there anymore. So, of course, this doesn't seem like a Bill Belichick type of team to me. He's going to have to put the pieces back together in order to get a better effort from this football team.
Yeah, B, I went back to my notes, back to the Denver game. And there was one point that stood out, and it said sloppy. And the reason why I wrote sloppy is because this was the first time I ever saw a Bill Belichick team, a Patriots team, play this bad in so many different areas. I spent most of my career in the AFC, B. And when I tell you, man, when you turn on film and you see the special teams mistakes, when have you ever seen a special team mistake from Bill Belichick-led team? You've never seen that. Then you look at pass pro. I mentioned a little bit yesterday, but you've never seen just free rushers at the quarterback. I don't know if it's Josh McDaniels. I don't know if it's Cam Newton. But setting that protection hasn't been done right the last 2 games. This guy is running for his life, and it could be McDaniels. It could be him. And then you also look at just the simple mistakes when it comes to not chasing down a DB after he picks the ball off, Julian Edelman. And Wiles, if you want to say it, Hall of Famer Julian Edelman. And I think Slater may be talking to him when he talks about attitude and effort. There's a couple picks where he doesn't do anything. The ball's intercepted. Julian Edelman stands there. He doesn't chase him down. He pouts. That can't happen. That attitude needs to change. It needs to start with Julian Edelman. So, he is that leader. You can't do this.
Look, we're totally fine.
This would be a big story for another team. But when the Patriots win a game, Bill Belichick gets up there and rips the team. And when we lose a game, it's just open season. You can say anything you want. Here's the quote from Belichick, which is much worse than Matthew Slater's quote. He said, "We didn't perform well enough in any area. Offense, defense, special teams, running, passing, defending the run, defending the pass, ball security, tackling, blocking. None of it was good enough. Maybe I left something out." So, Nick,
It doesn't concern me at all. It's sort of the Patriot way that you can say anything you want after a loss. There's two things. You can say anything you want, and you can do anything you want to the Microsoft Surface. You can pick it up. You can smash it. You can drop kick it out across the field. It's of no concern. You can do anything you want, and that's question. Just, it sort of galvanizes the team.
So, no. That's serious. Like, listen. That's a serious question, right? Like, when have we ever seen Bill Belichick lead a loser? And I'm not talking about record. I'm talking about attitude.
Brandon,
you can do whatever you want when you win. It's 100%. When you're winning,
Brandon,
the stuff that Julian Edelman is doing.
I think you just opened a door to what Matthew Slater's talking about here. Because what we have heard from Coach Mangini, from former players, from anybody, what have we heard about New England? It's not fun. It's incredibly hard. It is different than everywhere else. But what is the end result of that? You're in the playoffs every year. Yep. You're winning. You never get humiliated on the football field. So for guys who have been there, they know the juice is worth the squeeze. Now let's look at this team. Young guys haven't been part of the winning. Young, new players obviously don't know anything about the long-term Patriot way. And guys who have been there a long time have never dealt with this. All that hard work, all that attention to detail, all those brutal practices have paid off in, well, we win 11 or 12 games every year. We're never underdogs.
Well,
and
even,
when we
even
lose, it's close.
Well, think about this. It's even Julian Edelman's attitude, right? When he usually does that, but they still win the game. Or he'll do that. Tom Brady do that, and they still win 12 games that year. But when you're losing and you're a loser, okay, you can't do these things because of what you said. There are rookies there. There's new guys there that don't know the Patriot way. They've never seen it. So now the culture begins to shift, and guys start acting like that.
Right.
So the question now is, can Bill Belichick lead a loser? The last time he had a losing season was 2000. That's 20 years ago.
Right.
So these are multi-million dollar athletes, football players, okay, and they have egos as well. So all of that, let's take a lap, let's do this when it's December and it snows on the ground and it's cold. You start seeing guys talk back. You start seeing guys do what they want to do. We might have a culture issue in New England, Wilds.
Do you learn to lead a loser or do you pivot? Or do you pivot and start from scratch? There's a report out of New England, which has turned a few heads this week. Wait, Wilds, that the Patriots are considering trading Defensive Player of the Year Stephon Gilmore before next week's trade deadline. So, Brian, let me start with you because I can't believe I'm asking this, but should the Patriots actually tank this season or is it still salvageable?
Well, I never believed that the Patriots will tank, and I still do believe that is salvageable. And here's the reason why. I think the Bills, who are 3-0 in the division, I'm just not getting that strong feeling for them. The Patriots are 1-0 in the division.
Right.
They have an upcoming game against the Bills. I still think they have an opportunity to win this division, even with all the problems that we're talking about, even with all the issues that we're talking about. I still think they have an opportunity to win this division because I don't know how strong the Bills are at this point in the season.
Correct. Well, so, Brian, you nailed it. And, by the way, you said the Bills are 3-0 in the division. Mike McCarthy should call up the Bills organization and let them know. You get to 4 wins in the division, you usually win it. Even bigger game for the Bills this week. And I don't know if they had that advanced analytics. But this Wilds, this weekend is as big of a regular season game as you guys have played in a very long time. If you win, and I think you will, even though you're 4-point dogs, then I believe you guys just stay the course. If you lose, and all of a sudden the Bills have the tiebreaker, the Bills are 3 games clear of you, it is looking bad, then I do think Bill Belichick calls up, I don't know, Steve Keim in Arizona, says, hey, Steve, got a rookie quarterback on a rookie contract. You just lost Chandler Jones, coming off a great win. You don't love Dre Kirkpatrick as your second corner? Come on. But you got Patrick Peterson over there. You want to pair him up with Stephon Gilmore, Brandon? You want to have two number one corners on that team? I think Gilmore, who's on a very reasonable contract for next season, would get you a first-round pick. He is that level of player.
No.
I wouldn't do it, Brandon, if you beat the Bills. You beat the Bills, you know you win the next week because you have the Jets. You're 4-4 and you're right there. But if you fall to 2-5, if you lose 4 in a row, then I do think you consider trading Stephon Gilmore, Brandon.
No, I just think it's funny that we're talking about the Patriots and we're also talking about them tanking. I mean, it's always been the Patriots, a handful of teams here, the Saints, maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yep. A couple teams may entertain that tier, Nick. And then it's everyone else. And for the very first time, we're seeing a humanized New England Patriot team. I don't believe that they're going to tank. I don't believe that they're going to just throw in the towel because they still have a chance to make it to the playoffs. So Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels, and even Cam Newton, they know they're one good game away from being right in it. Just a couple weeks ago, they were right there. We were talking about how awesome of a team they are. So, yes, they need to have a pass catcher. They need to protect Cam. Cam needs to protect himself. But if Cam has one good game, now things change, and it's a totally different topic.
That's right. Well, you know, they had discussions about trading Stephon Gilmore. Like, I've had discussions about moving to Barcelona. It's not going to happen, but of course, like, wow, that would be interesting, huh? Eat lunch at 4 o'clock, but it's not going to happen. But to everyone's surprise, I do think that we should tank, but it's Masterpiece tank, the gold tank, coming down 995, because the answer to all these questions are yes. Are we better than the Jets? Yes. Are we better than the rookie Dolphins? Yes. Does anybody want to see us in the playoffs as we straggle in at 9-7? No. I mean, though I said it was yes, I meant are we dangerous in the playoffs? Yes. So look, we have to win this game, but even if we lose, I'm back. I've got my swagger back, my Patriots swagger back. Even if we lose, the Bills have the third toughest schedule, and we have to play them again in December. They have to play the Seahawks, the 49ers, the Steelers, the Cardinals, the Chiefs, which are okay, and then us again. Yeah. So I feel okay even if we lose this game. I'm not tanking unless it's a gold-plated tank that I'm driving.
Just to recap, move to Barcelona, eat lunch at 4 o'clock. Speaking of salvageable teams, the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones may have hit his boiling point yesterday. You got to hear what he had to say and how he said it. Next, first things first.
And Wilds get Silk the Shocker in the show.
Back to our top story this morning, the Fall Classic. And for the first time since 1988, the Los Angeles Dodgers are World Series champions. L.A. beating the Rays 3-1 in Game 6 to close it out last night. And with that, we are now joined by Fox MLB analyst Ken Rosenthal to help break it all down. Ken, good morning. I know it was a late night. We thank you so much for getting up, for joining us. We got a couple questions, and we'll let you go back to sleep. Let's start with the Dodgers. Put this win in perspective for us, for this team.
The best word to say would be finally. This is a team that has made the playoffs 8 straight years, won 8 straight division titles, has been in 3 of the last 4 World Series, and yet has had a series of October disappointments. And this was, in my opinion, their best team, at least since Andrew Friedman took over the club in 2015. They were so deep, so talented, and much the best. So to see them win, even in the shortened season with the expanded postseason and all the stuff going on, it was quite satisfying from a baseball perspective because they were the best. They had earned this. We've seen Kershaw go through October disappointment. We've seen the manager been scrutinized, and yet, finally, they got it done.
You mentioned managers being scrutinized. And while Dave Routt's been scrutinized, what Kevin Cash is dealing with this morning will deal with all offseason is going to be a different level of scrutiny. You were there going into the sixth inning, and even knowing Blake Snell's track record of he doesn't go the third time through a lineup, did you have any inclination or feeling that he wasn't going to start the sixth? And once you saw him start the sixth, did you think there was any chance he would be pulled if he allowed a single?
Nick, it only crossed my mind because that's what the Rays do. They pull guys before their third time through the order. And it's kind of just the way they roll. Now, that said, there were extenuating circumstances here to make you think that this wouldn't happen in this particular case. One, Blake Snell was absolutely brilliant. And even after he allowed the hit to Austin Barnes, who's the number nine hitter for the Dodgers, he's facing the top of the order. The top of the order against him in this game had been 0 for 9 with 6 strikeouts. Again, he's at 73 pitches. There's no problem here. Everything's good. And the guy they brought in, Nick Anderson, a right-handed pitcher who has been great in the regular season, has struggled mightily in the postseason, had allowed runs in 6 straight appearances. And on top of all that, they bring Nick Anderson to face Mookie Betts. And Betts has struggled against left-handers like Blake Snell and not so much against right-handers for whatever reason. Betts is a right-handed hitter. It's a weird thing that's happened this year. So there were so many reasons not to make this move, and yet the Rays did what the Rays do, and they paid dearly.
Kim, we talked about this earlier. You know, sometimes in big moments, your big players, your star players, do things that they're not supposed to do, right? They, in those uncomfortable moments, they rise to the occasion. We saw it in the NBA Finals with Jimmy Butler, fourth quarter, just tired, playing so many minutes. Do you think Cash's decision will have a long-term effect on how managers manage their pitchers in big moments?
This is a great question. And originally last night when I sat down, when I thought about writing, I was going to write about this decision and how, in my opinion, this could be a turning point in the way people view analytics and the way teams go about handling their starting pitchers. Because this was so clearly wrong to so many people that perhaps now there will be a reevaluation. So I do believe it was actually bigger than this moment. There's a lot in play here, and baseball has gone the analytical route probably to a greater extent than any other sport. And yep, to many people, it's taken some of the soul out of the game. And that was a classic example last night. And actually, the sport needs to get back to having starting pitchers learn how to go deep into games, and that was part of the character of the sport for a long time. So I don't know if it's going to have the kind of effect that I'm talking about here, but if ever there was a moment that should,
it should. Yeah.
So Ken, if you talk about analytics, I'm going to show you a video here of a famous clip of Messina and Joe Torre. We talk about, you know, the analytics, we talk about the front office, we talk about the managerial decisions. But this is Messina saying, no, stay there. And I'm surprised, as you see in other sports, the amount of influence that star players have over the decisions in the game, that we're not seeing it in baseball. That the decision of whether or not I can pitch is left up to people, not me. And you don't see it in basketball. You see football, you see guys, I'm good to go, put me out there. And managers kind of saying like, okay, I trust the player. But in baseball, it isn't. So do you think it's a player empowerment is the right word, or just more vocalization and ownership of their own destinies, that we could see that as well as we move forward?
It's another good question. I hadn't thought about that because that's not how baseball rolls. And I must say, guys, I apologize. I'm not as familiar with the other sports. I'm so wedded to this one and knee deep in it all the time. Baseball is a different kind of culture than football and basketball in particular. There's less individuality. Now we're seeing more with some of the younger players, and they're showing their joy for the game and passion, and they're doing it without offending anybody, because everybody gets offended in baseball all the time when anybody acts like they're having fun. But I don't know if the next step, which you're describing, is coming where players take more control of their destiny. That's not how the game has gone. Perhaps now there will be some more talk about that. But again, the culture of the sport is not an individual type of thing. It's more the collective. And there hasn't been that defiance of managers in the past. Not too often.
Ken, this was a great Dodgers team. It was a great Dodgers team coming into the season. They probably didn't need to get that much better. But then they add Mookie Betts, and he's just been so fun to watch this season. Can you just talk about what impact he had on an already dynamic lineup like this Dodgers team had this year?
tremendous impact, and it goes beyond even what you see on the field. And what you see on the field, watching the video right here, it's amazing. It's athletic. It's all facets of the game. But this guy has an effect on his teammates that, again, is not something you can measure and quantify. He is the hardest worker on the team. He is perhaps the most intelligent player on the team. He is a guy that everyone else looks to. And I'll tell you a little story. In spring training, he was not yet signed to that 12-year deal. He had just come to the Dodgers. He's a potential free agent. He might be there for only 1 year at that point, as far as we know. First day of spring training, he has a meeting with the team and basically says, guys, we're going to be accountable. This is all about winning the World Series, and we're going to be accountable to each other. We're going to do things a certain way. And that, to me, is pretty strong when you come in and do that. And they rallied behind him. And, in fact, when they had their social justice moment, it was because he decided he wasn't going to play that night. And the rest of the team said, if he's not playing, we're not playing either. That's the power of that guy in the clubhouse. And it goes beyond that particular thing. It goes to every aspect of the way this team goes. And he's a joy to watch, obviously, and really a model player for the sport.
Ken, before we go, be remiss if we didn't ask you about Clayton Kershaw. You mentioned you're knee-deep in the sport. I'm going to give you six names real quick. Satchel Paige, Sandy Koufax, Bob Gibson, Roger Clemens, Greg Maddux, Pedro Martinez. I think those are the best pitchers of the last 100 years. Can I add Clayton Kershaw to that list now that he has the one thing that was missing on his resume?
Actually, to me, he was there before. And I know he has not been great in October. We've talked about this endlessly, and for good reason. He has not been great in October. This year, he was much better, in part because they handled him better. In years past, they asked him to go extra hitter, an extra inning. They asked him to pitch in relief. They asked him to go on short rest. They did not always put him in the best possible position to succeed. This year, they were more careful. And he's getting older, and of course you would hope that they would be like that. But what he has done in his career, it's first ballot Hall of Famer, it's inner circle Hall of Famer, however you want to describe it. And in my view, he didn't need this, but to those who feel that this guy was not an October guy, not clutch and all of that, he answered those questions.
Ken Rosenthal, thanks so much for getting up, hanging out with us today. Great insight, appreciate it. Congratulations on a great season. We'll talk to you soon. We are going to take a turn, talk some football now. Nick will break out his NFL tiers on the other side. Some interesting moves after last week, some we didn't all see coming. Stay with us. That's next. Tomorrow, Matt Ryan and the Falcons need a win to get their season back on track as they take on NFC South rival Teddy Bridgewater and the Panthers. It all starts 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Amazon Prime. All right, back to our top story this morning. The best team during the shortened baseball season turned out to be the last team standing. The Dodgers are your World Series champions. They beat the Rays 3-1 last night in Game 6 to close it out. Among the many storylines this morning, the ever-so-curious decision from Rays manager Kevin Cash to pull the very hot Blake Snell in the sixth inning. Had 9 Ks, just the one earned run. Dodgers obviously thrilled with the move. They quickly scored 2 runs, and selfishly, they never gave the lead back. After the game, Kevin Cash on his very curious decision.
Lineup the Dodgers features as potent as any team in the league. Personally, I felt Blake had done his job and then some. Mookie coming around for the third time through. I value that. I totally respect and understand the questions that come with it. Blake gave us every opportunity to win. He was outstanding. They're not easy decisions. And that's where I came to the decision. I felt it was best after the guy got on base. Barnes hit the single. Didn't want Mookie or Seager seeing Blake a third time.
I did everything I could to, you know, prove my case to stay out there. And then for us to lose, you know, it sucks.
I'm not the manager. I don't make decisions. Asking for my opinion, though, I think it was Blake's game. He was dominating. I don't really care what the numbers say, third time through the order or whatever. There wasn't many guys making contact in general and no hard contact whatsoever. And, you know, I think we all wanted to see him go in there or stay in there. But it's, you know, Cash and everyone, they've been great this whole year with making decisions. And, you know, it didn't work out for us right there.
I was pretty happy because he was dominating us and we just weren't seeing him. So, you know, once Austin got that hit, then they went to the pen. I think that Mookie looked at me with a little smile and we were just all kind of excited that Snell was out of the game.
Look, Snell, by the way, hadn't gone six innings all season, so it is mildly understandable that you would think that's what Kevin Cash would do. But, Nick, did this decision by Cash, was that a gift to the Dodgers? Is that why they won the game, the series? Oh.
Well, it definitely was a gift to the Dodgers. It's not the only reason they won. Listen, what's getting lost here, the Rays scored one run. You're not going to win this game 1-0. It just wasn't going to happen. So the offense needed to be better. But that was not a self-inflicted wound. And so this is really complicated, but it's also really simple. It's complicated in this regard. Kind of almost from a philosophical standpoint. Should you ever, in the most critical moment of your season, change philosophies drastically from what got you there? The Rays have done this all year. This is how they're built. This is how the front office, what the front office believes in. That's why Kevin Cash is the manager, because he implements these things. And as Jenna mentioned, it's literally been zero times all year that Blake Snell has pitched six full innings. So that's the complicated part of it. The simple part is this. The number one rule of coaching or managing in sports at any level is before you make a major decision, have your final question you ask yourself be, what is my opponent hoping I'll do? It's fourth and inches in the fourth quarter of a football game. Do I punt? Do I go for it? Well, what does the other team's players and coaches hope I do? If they want you to punt, then you probably should go for it. In that moment, and we heard Dave Roberts tell us, but we all already knew Wilds, in that moment, the Dodgers were praying Blake Snell be taken out, which means it is the wrong decision. And this is why, while I believe in analytics as much as anyone, this is why you don't simply have a computer spit out the lineup card and then print out something when it's time to make a pitching change. There has to be an art to go along with the science. You have to allow for some human element of feel and situation and not totally be just a slave to the data, because we all knew watching this game that the Dodgers were hoping Blake Snell would be taken out, and Wilds, Kevin Cash did them a favor by taking him out.
Sure. So this is resonating with people because it's an uninspiring move, right? So, like, when you saw Kirk Gibson up there hit a home run, it was an inspiring moment in sports, and this isn't. So that's why it hits an emotional chord. But Blake Snell deserves some of the blame here, because Blake Snell hasn't pitched long all year. Here it is real quick, and I'll go lightning speed. Innings pitched this year. 2, 3, 3, 5, 5 and 2/3, 5, 5 and 1/3, 5 and 1/3, 5 and 1/3. Postseason, 5 and 2/3, 5, 5, 4, 4 and 2/3, and 5 and 1/3 last night. So when Kevin Cash comes out there and he's rolling his eyes and swearing, well, what do you expect? What have you shown me that you can go deep into a game? If that was the plan, either do two things. One, early in the year, the Rays management should know, hey, we should try out some like playoff scenarios on this random game against the Orioles. Let's try this. Let's see if he can go long. Or two, in the pregame meeting, have some ownership of your own destiny. You're a Cy Young Award winner. You're not some guy they just got out of North Carolina, first-round draft pick, Tar Heel, coming in and being like, oh, my first day in the World Series. You've got some control of your destiny, so go to the manager and say, hey, I want a chance to not only win the game,
I want a chance to lose the game. I want you to ride me to the bitter
Mike
end.
Messina,
and
like
Brandon, I'll show you a clip of Mike Messina yelling at Joe Torre because maybe Mike Messina, maybe it was a different
That's
era.
Right.
Mike Messina's older than Blake Snell. But he's telling Joe Torre, sit in, don't take me out. And Torre's like, okay, fine.
Stay there.
I would like to see this era in baseball come back where the pitcher has some, you know, ownership of their own destiny and how the game goes.
I agree with you, and I think Kevin Cash's decision will change baseball long term and how the managers manage their pitchers in big moments. You just pointed out there's something about big players in big moments. You don't know what it is as a coach. This reminds me of the quarterback waving off the coach when he's trying to send in the field goal kicker. We're staying out here. It's fourth down. You saw Jimmy Butler just in the finals, game five, stay out there and play absurd minutes, and he was exhausted, laying on the floor in front of the world to see. So this reminds me of one of those moments where the player has to be given a chance to go get it. Joe Buck and Smoltz said something last night on the broadcast was excellent. They talked about how there's so many coaches in baseball now, some managers in baseball now, looking for reasons to take out their pitchers when they really should be looking for reasons to keep them in the game.
That's good.
So for me, this is going to define how managers manage their pitchers in baseball in these big moments moving forward, because that was absolutely ridiculous. This dude was on fire.
And I can't speak to hockey because I don't know anything about it. But in the three sports I know something about, we are seeing a theme, which is, and I am an analytics guy, but the analytics have not solved for the delta between the regular season and the postseason. My pal Nate Silver has this very fancy NBA algorithm that gives predictions, and it is great. You can make a lot of money betting off it in the regular season. And in the playoffs, it is horrible, just laughably bad, because it can't account for LeBron and the difference in how guys play in the postseason. Last year, we were told all year, this Baltimore Ravens team, by DVOA in advanced numbers, is one of the five greatest teams ever. But those of us watching were like, I'm a little worried in the postseason. If they get down, can they throw? And we in basketball this year with Giannis, it's 30 minutes a game. It's great. He's rested. And a lot of us said, but what about in the playoffs when he's going to have to play 42? And what the Rays did all year, Jenna, made sense for them. It worked for them. But because of the way they handled their pitchers. Wilds, go ahead.
Because of the way they handled it.
Because he's not built up for this.
I feel like we missed out on an all-time Nick Wright take, because you're the closest to the analytics community, that if Kevin Cash left Blake Snell in the game, and you would come on and do the same thing that you would run off all of the innings and be like, what in the world are you doing? For 16 straight times, four times in the postseason, you never went this long. And then you leave him in. It's the most foolish decision. It's like doing blackjack and hitting all of a sudden. I felt like you would have lost your mind.
That's sports.
If he stayed in. So it didn't work out, but I can be argued that it's the right call.
Yeah, but that's the business. That's what we got to deal with. They got to deal with the Nick Wrights. They got to deal with the Jenna Wolfs. But you got to do things that people may not think is smart. You got to be comfortable in those uncomfortable situations. Like, he should have left him in there. You even talked about Giannis, Nick.
I understand.
Go back to Giannis in the final. Hold on, but you talked about Giannis. He averaged, 20-30 minutes all season? And then they get in the playoffs and they stick to it. They don't play him 40 minutes a game. And what happens? They're out of there. Same thing. It's an elimination game. Closeout game.
Wilds, just to answer your point, given how they've handled Snell all year, it is a defensible play. Just like, given Giannis's minutes all year, it was defensible for Budenholzer to say 36 is the ceiling. But it calls into question whether or not that approach all year will actually end up costing you at the end of the year. whether or not you need to sacrifice some regular season success to have guys ready for the biggest postseason moments. And Jenna, analytics hasn't accounted for that yet.
Congratulations to the Dodgers.